Speak loud and clear. The Rabash article, what is he who defiles himself is defiled from above in the work. It is written in the Zohar, what is or on a far off road? It is because a person who defiles himself is defiled from above. Thus he is on a far off road from that place and road to which the seed of Israel adhere. For he has clung to a far off road, has moved away from approaching you, Israel, referring to the Sitra Achra, which is far from Kedusha. Rabbi Yitzchak said, it is written, if he is defiled for a soul or on a far-off road. This means that there are two things. Rabbi Yossi said, here, when it says defiled for a soul, it means before he has defiled from above. And here, when it says on far-off road, it means that it is after one has been defiled from above and fell to a far-off road, which is the Sitra Achra. This means that on both, the Kedusha of above will not be on them, and they will not do the Passover when Israel do it. Also, in the Zohar, it says, his kingship rules over all. For this reason, the Shekhinah is called an offering to the Lord, a burnt offering to the Lord. Everything should be sacrificed to the Lord and to his Shekhinah. Afterward, the Shekhinah imparts to all, as it is written, and gives prey to her household, even food for animals, and even for dogs, she imparts everything in order to fulfill, and his kinship rules over all. We should understand why one who defiles himself is defiled from above. Meaning, why is it man's fault that he is defiled from above? Why is he punished with not being able to do the Passover when the Zohar says, is the meaning of the words, if he is defiled for a soul or on a far-off road? He is defiled for a soul before he is defiled from above, and on a far-off road after he has been defiled from above, and neither will do the Passover when Israel do it. We should understand this. If he has defiled himself, he can no longer do the Passover offering. So for what purpose is he defiled from above? Also, why is he defiled from above if the tum'ah, the impurity that is done from above, is not his fault? Therefore, we should understand the following. One, for what purpose is he defiled from above, if he cannot make a Passover offering because he is impure? Two, why is he defiled? Since choice is something that a person makes. And when he is defiled from above, this impurity does not come to him by choice. Three, we should also understand what the Zohar writes about the verse, his kingship rules over all, that the Shekhinah imparts nourishments to all, to animals and beasts, and even to dogs and donkeys, which are the klipot. Why must the Shekhinah provide them with nourishments as they are her adversaries and enemies of the Kedusha? To understand the above, we must first know what are Kedusha and Tum'ah in the work. In actions, Tum'ah and Tahara, purity and impurity, are clear, as it is written in the Torah, or what our sages added concerning Tum'ah, Kedusha, and Tahara. But in the work, that is the meaning, what is the meaning of impurity, purity? Pleasure. However, this kli called receiving in order to bestow is the complete opposite of the kli called will to receive for oneself, which we attribute to the Creator, who created it existence from absence. Hence, if we want to work only for the sake of the Creator and not for our own sake, it is hard work, since we must fight against the kli that the Creator created. From this work come all the lacks we learn about, such as the departure of the lights, the breaking of the vessels, Kedusha, Tum'ah, Sitra Achra, and Klipot. Also, all the names we see explained in the Zohar and in books of Kabbalah extend only from the correction of creation. This is so because we attribute the kelim of the correction of creation to the creatures, as it is written in the beginning of Tree of Life, and as he explains in the study of Ten Sefirot, that the first will to receive, called Malchut of Ein Sof, said that she does not want to receive in order to receive, but in order to bestow. Naturally, if we want to go against the nature that the Creator created, which is the opposite, it comes to us by hard work. In the upper worlds, this caused the departure of the lights and the breaking of the vessels. And then the klipot emerged, and the distance between Kedusha and Tum'ah was made. Kedusha is called equivalence of form. This is the meaning of Dvikut. As it is written, you will be holy, for I am holy. This means that as the Creator wants only to do good to His creations, the creatures should also want to be on a degree of doing good to the Creator and not to themselves. It follows that before we achieve the correction of creation, and while still immersed in self-love, a person cannot receive the delight and pleasure, and the restriction and concealment that occurred are on him. That is, we must say that all the concealments we suffer are because such is the order of corrections. That by this, all the creatures will arrive at the end of correction. Meaning that all the vessels that emerged with the quality of receiving for themselves will be corrected in order into working in order to bestow. Naturally, they will be able to receive the delight and pleasure. It follows that then, at the end of correction, there will no longer be a need for the restriction and concealment. This is the meaning of the words, and your teacher will no longer hide himself. It follows that remoteness and closeness are that if a person does everything in order to bestow, he is close to Kedusha. As was said, you will be holy. If he does everything for his own sake, he is far from Kedusha. Accordingly, we should ask, if the delight and pleasure cannot shine in vessels of reception because of the restriction that took place, how will the created beings exist in the world before their vessels of bestowal are corrected? From where can the creatures derive pleasure? For without pleasure, it is impossible to live, since such was the order of creation. Therefore, we learn that promptly after the restriction, when there was the departure of the light, records remained in order to sustain the vessels. The first vessels from which the light departed are called the vessels of circles, kelim of igulim, and the record that remained from the light sustains the vessels. Yet this can be said only about the vessels of Kedusha. As was explained, that in the Partsufim of Adam HaKadmon, the records remained in the vessels after the departure of the lights. Conversely, in the world of Nikudim, where the vessels fell to the Klipot after the departure of the lights, we learn that the records remained in the place of Atzilut, since the Reshimot, the records which are parts of the light, cannot enter the Klipot. Rather, only sparks fell into the vessels to sustain them. That is, the vessels that fell into the Klipot and all of their vitality is only because sparks of Kedusha fell into them. From this comes all the vitality of the Klipot. As the Ari interprets, only a slim light, called very thin light, compared to what is found in Kedusha, is all the vitality that fell into the corporeal world. In other words, all the life and the corporeal pleasures that the entire world chases in order to obtain, since they feel that this is their entire life, are but a very thin light compared to the spiritual pleasures. And on the spiritual pleasures was the intention to do good to his creations, called the purpose of creation. By this we will understand why the Kedusha must give nourishments to the Klipot. For otherwise, they will not be able to exist, since the desire to do good to his creations causes that if the creatures have no delight and pleasure at all, they cannot exist and must die. Since man is born with an inherent nature to receive only for his own sake, he is under the control of the Klipot. At that time, it is impossible to receive vitality from the Kedusha. Hence, even when he begins to engage in Torah and mitzvot, he must begin in Lo Lishma, or else from where will he have life? Therefore, the Kedusha gives nourishments to the Klipot, so the Klipot will have life and nourishments which sustain the creatures while they are under their control. Only through the reforming light in Torah and Mitzvot, when they achieve Lishma, meaning when they can work in order to bestow, then the concealment and hiding called restriction departs from them. Then they can receive their vitality from the Kedusha, where the real pleasures are revealed, and not as they received, only a slim light of Kedusha, but real light of Kedusha. By this we will understand what we asked about what the Zohar says and his kingship rules over all, that the Shekhinah imparts nourishments to all, to animals, beasts, and even to dogs and donkeys, which are the klipot. We should understand for what purpose the Shekhinah should sustain them. Since it is impossible to exist without light and pleasure, and there is no other power in the world that can sustain them, as it is written, there is none else besides Him, hence the Shekhinah sustains them and gives them nourishments so as to sustain them. The Shekhinah imparts the nourishments to each and one according to his degree. As he says, although all of the offerings are to the Lord, of them he gives to the dogs, which are the disqualified offerings, which he gives to Sam, who is called a dog, and some of them are as ministering angels, and some of them are as humans. This means that the Shekhinah imparts nourishments to each one according to his quality. Meaning there are people who are as humans, there are those who are as pure beasts, and there are those who are as dogs, etc. The Shekhinah imparts nourishments to all. However, according to one's effort to ascend on the rungs of Kedusha, so is the abundance he receives. That is, if a person comes to a degree where his only pleasure is in serving the king, he receives abundance suitable for Kedusha. If the person can work only in order to receive for himself, he receives according to his merit. For this reason, those who wish to walk on the path of truth, but cannot overcome the will to receive for oneself, but want nourishments so they can overcome it, they receive from Kedusha, which is called the light in it reforms him. They receive nourishments according to their preparation. That is, they receive vitality in being able to perform acts of bestowal. Conversely, those who are still as dogs, as it is written in the Zohar that they howl as dogs, hav, hav, give, give, must receive vitality within the vessels of self-benefit.
מה שאין כן,
This is not so with people who want to exit self-love. Sometimes they receive nourishments, meaning vitality, from wanting to work in order to bestow.
But
when they do not appreciate the nourishments they received with the vessels of bestowal, they are given some lust that they crave, and they begin to think about the pleasure of the lust. At that time, they completely forget about the spiritual work and suffer an immediate descent, until they no longer feel the situation they are in. In truth, they are in a state of unconsciousness, meaning that they do not recognize that there is the matter of spirituality in which they previously engaged with all their hearts. But suddenly, they have completely forgotten about it. Finally, they recover and begin to feel that they are in descent. However, it is as though they were in a car accident, God forbid, and were left unconsciousness. When they recover, they see that they are in a hospital. Likewise, a person who was walking on the path toward achieving the aim to bestow was suddenly hit by some passion which entered his heart, and he became unconscious. That is, he fell into the corporeal world. After some time, he recovers, meaning that he heard a clarion from above that he is not all right. Now we can understand what we asked. Why is it that when a person defiles himself, he is defiled from above? As the Zohar says about the verse, if he is defiled for a soul or on a far-off road. The answer is that it is because he defiled himself in the work. We should interpret in vision. If he defiled himself and did not repent, he must be defiled from above, meaning that they let a spirit of folly enter him. This is for man's best. For when one works without reason, it is as though he works without an intention to sin, since he has no reason that we can say that we acted deliberately. Hence, being defiled from above is a correction. And naturally, there is no question why he is defiled, since by this they do him a favor. Naturally, whether he is defiled only by seeing, which is certainly considered a mistake, and all the more so afterward, when he is defiled by coveting, they already show that they are not close to Kedusha. Although seeing was by mistake, still there was no spirit of folly in him. But at the time of coveting, he already had the spirit of folly. Although we should ask, but when he is defiled from above, there are two things in him, meaning seeing and coveting. Perhaps he wants to say that even when he had the possibility to be one thing, he was already unworthy of nearing. In the article here, he talks about the eye sees and the heart covets. And he says that the spirit of folly enters because he didn't repent for seeing.
So,
what does it mean that we need to constantly be in repentance for what we see? To constantly be in this process of repentance? What does it mean to repent?
That we constantly follow what we see, what enters the eye. And from the eye needs to get to the heart. And before it enters the heart, we need to analyze it, put it critically, and establish, as we once read, cups and guards in all your gates.
And if the same thing repeats itself, same thought or the same vision that repeats itself,
it may seem to us the same, but it's always, it's not. It's always new records, new vision.
So what attitude should we have towards the whole corporeal reality? If so, some kind of neutral attitude towards it, or?
Why neutral?
Because we're constantly putting some boundary, so that all the thoughts won't enter the heart. We're constantly, so what's the attitude towards the corporeal reality?
The corporeal reality, the material attitude should be that I'm ready with my own forces, I'm sharper in my reading. To discern them, discern all those disturbances. Either those are disturbances from the side of sanctity or the side of the shell. So I need to try and receive them from the side of sanctity. Although superficially it seems to be against me, if I accept it as coming from the Creator,
it
means I need to try and establish a different attitude, which is for my own benefit, and I need to connect to those conditions that are approaching me, and together with them to move forward.
And if we enter the process itself of repentance, what does it mean? I put the connection of the 10 against anything that appears, or how is it?
What are you saying?
Everything I see, I put it against the connection with the 10. Is that repentance, or what is it to repent?
Yes, certainly, that's it.
There's an example of the angel of death with the sword, and on the end of the sword there's a little drop of oil, of poison, and a person opens his mouth and that drop, he swallows it and dies. There's this example where the angel of death stands with a sword, and there's a drop of poison on the tip of it, and the person swallows the poison and dies. It's like there's no no choice. He has to die. So how can he hear on the way, not put it into his heart, or prevent some,
I don't
know, put some kind of protection here, a shield, a group?
If he's tied to the group, to the process, he understands that everything that comes is to his benefit, to advance him. If he's not ready, it turns out that he receives this process as the other way around, to harm him.
That he receives before death or after death, like after it happened? Or is there a possibility while you're to somehow discern the situation and decide what side I want to receive this from?
He decides.
When does he decide? After he dies, or before he dies, or after he dies?
Of course, before he dies. He has to determine through the connection with the friends that everything that comes in order to bring him up.
To continue that also, the eye sees and the heart covets. It's really not clear. Is there a gap between seeing and coveting? Because it's like an automatic process. You see, you covet.
Stopper.
So you can put a timer here and test it. A gate, that although you feel this coming to the heart, this likening, you can, this coveting, you can stop it, you can even reverse its direction.
It's not felt that way also in the last paragraph. He says, if they see him from above, a lot of things are found, meaning seeing and coveting. I mean, they come together. It's an automatic mechanism. It's the will to receive, no?
But how do you respond to it?
So that's also Yitzhak's question. After we already saw and coveted, and I said, is that when I respond, or is there a gap between the two? Or
you allowed the coveting to enter your heart?
That's what I was asking.
That's what needs to be there. The eye sees and the heart covets. So the eye sees, it sees. There's nothing to do about it. It's not in our hands. But the heart covets. Here, we need to seemingly place a gate here where I don't allow the heart to reach coveting. Otherwise, I'll have no ability to keep going.
Because he describes it like a fish that sees the bait, and the fish immediately forgets about all the danger. Will it be taken out of the water or what? He sees the bait and he tempts it. He says the person's like the same. And only later, inevitably, he's recovering. He gives like an example of a car accident. And only if he recovers, then it seems to him like that.
And that's how they teach a person, but to the extent that he overcomes and does things correctly.
So maybe I'll ask it this way. Because he says that if he didn't see the danger in advance, like in the car accident, if he didn't see the danger when he had the chance to overcome the thought, so it won't enter his heart. So what is to see the danger in advance?
That he also have these vessels with which to see the danger.
What vessels to see the danger?
Either he is like a baby or like a fish. He swallows and he thinks only about his immediate pleasure. Or he's able to look ahead and see the danger behind it.
I see some kind of temptation. I need to be very cautious about why it's coming and all that?
Also, that's certainly before, and also before that, you're looking for ways to approach the Creator, and when such a temptation comes, you wish to identify. Does it bring you closer or pushes you far?
Okay, there is free choice in this.
Yes, yes, it's always like that.
And it's like he's telling a person, in some way it's like, maybe you won't build this gate, like you said earlier, but putting this barrier, etc. Because it's really all from the Creator. So how not to fall to that place where you say there's none else besides him about everything, and you do take that responsibility because there's this tendency towards danger also, because they're saying anyway it's all corrections.
There's none else besides him can be like an obstacle here. When you say everything is the Creator, then you have no choice. You seemingly run away from what's right before you. Rather, in those states, you're not taking into consideration that there's none else besides him. You wish to take into consideration only your choice. How do you make that choice?
How not to fall into that danger? Because he's even kind of like comforting you with that, Rabbi. He says, that's a part of the correction. You're being given a favor from above, even though you're not responsible for this and you're not in it.
So what is the question?
It's like a very delicate place, how you pay attention to not fall into that place.
I make a calculation. What is before me? Either I take the straight path to the Creator above reason, I trust Him, or I accept whatever is in my power.
It places me like in that place of if there's none else besides him. And he also says here that if you fall there, it's even a good thing because it's on the side of correction in the heart. And I'm saying none else besides him. So on one hand, there's this danger. On the other hand, there's also my work. How do we do this correctly? Because anyway, in the end, it's all the actions of the Creator.
The fact that in the end everything will be the Creator's actions, that's clear. It has nothing to do with your choice. Even your choice will turn out to be completely dependent on the Creator. But now, what we need to do is everything that belongs to us. Therefore, you are judging it like that.
At least, as far as I'm concerned, it's a deep scrutiny because it's here through the society is the place that...
In the society, I come to the correct scrutiny.
What is that barrier between the eye and the heart?
It's 2 degrees. The eye sees and the heart covets.
If
we wish to tolerate it, we need to be worried that it will not even be seen. So I'm not going to follow what the mind sees.
So the barrier is before it even sees, or is it between the eye and the heart?
I will determine by that if I will have it or not.
I didn't understand what that barrier is. How do I acquire this barrier between the eye and the heart?
If I wish to make a choice in seeing, then I try to make it so that already in seeing I'll have the power of the barrier and I choose it from there, I step on it. If I can't do it, that's already a big problem in the heart. Can I make the calculation in my heart?
No.
How can the will to receive even deal with such a passion that tempts him?
This is, as it's written, a wise man has his eyes in his head. Since through seeing, he can already scrutinize where he needs to go.
And how do you acquire this correct vision?
I acquire the correct seeing through adhesion in the group. This still has to do with my own senses.
Why being defiled from above is a correction?
Because from above they add to him the will to receive. That's how it becomes more impure, more defiled, and it's all for him to scrutinize the discernments, the desires, his thoughts more accurately.
Says here about people who want to leave self-love. Sometimes they receive nourishments, meaning vitality, by wanting to do in order to bestow. However, when they don't consider the nourishments they received for vessels of bestowal, they are given some lust that appears to them. So if the example is that car that is the 10, I'm in the 10, I'm in good thoughts, and then some lack of importance comes for what they're receiving, like some car that's coming close and soon there's going to be an accident. What's the advice to such a person that's in the 10 already and starts to come close? He sees the lack of importance for the forces he received for vessels of bestowal coming to him, where all of a sudden lust can enter his heart right now. How do we, is there like a brake to press on, or is there a steering wheel that you can steer away from it? What, is there a way to elude it?
Yes.
What's the advice here?
I'm
already in a 10. I'm making efforts for connection, to want bestowal. I'm given even nourishments, and it could be that suddenly I won't give importance or consider these this help. What do we do?
Mm-hmm. What's left for us to do? Fall into the hands of the friends. It's not part of it.
So it's like to devote yourself even more to the ten when a lack of importance arrives, or
what is lack of importance? On the contrary, the ten is very important. I'm truly a zero who's in them like in the wavy sea. And it all depends on them.
They say they don't give a child a precious stone that he will lose. Here they're saying if there's already some kind of nourishments and vessels of bestowal, they don't consider them. Meaning in the 10, we must constantly raise the importance of the quality of bestowal so it will immediately be identified as something that comes to us?
Yes.
No, as kilu kol hazman tzarich,
kol hazman constantly need to be.
We
should constantly work toward the connection. And it turns out that this is where all your scrutinies are. to connect, and it turns out that each and every friend from the ten brings to the ten more and more new discernments. And if each ten overcomes and adds in connection above the small obstacles that each one is revealing, they can advance nicely.
So there's the goal to come to bestow, to bring contentment to the Creator, but I need to constantly be examining the connection in the ten.
Not just you, everyone.
All of us need to constantly be identifying what's happening in the ten so it will be connected?
Yes, and then you'll see how much it raises you higher and higher and higher without stopping.
I heard many times in the lesson the words, the spirit of folly. But I don't understand exactly what the spirit of folly is.
Folly, frivolity, is when a person says, it's not important, never mind, it won't help. I already tried, all these things. He rejects the help from the ten.
It's not kind of like foolish behavior, or is it towards the behavior in the ten, my attitude towards the ten?
No, it's not simply foolish behavior. It's instead of going and connecting and adding additional forces to the problem that each one is trying to bring to the society, he is not taking part in this. He thinks that things will just pass on their own.
He writes, if we want to work only for the benefit of the Creator and not for one's own benefit, it's hard work because we need to battle against the vessel the Creator created. Now about this war, I find lately that the center of my war is for the morning lesson. The battle, the war is on the level of hours of sleep hours, even what to eat in the evening in order for me to wake up later and be alert and awakened to the lesson. Now, I feel like this war is still a war on the level that is, it's like an athlete that has, tomorrow he has a competition. See, also he needs to look at his sleeping and his food. What is the war on the morning lesson? What war on a higher level do I need to aspire for?
I need to come to the morning lesson with questions. Ready. What is clear to me, what is not clear to me, check both during the lesson. And to pull myself in the direction of the group.
What is the war here? If I come now with ready questions, I went over the article before the lesson, I took out some questions.
So you check to what extent your opinion, are in wholeness.
A person on the path constantly grows, his desire grows, and every temptation, more or less, that we're standing before kind of distances you from the ten. But
it also connects you later.
Exactly. But so how do I identify what distances me, what's dangerous, and what distances me even for like a month or a period, and then I come back and I actually bring something with me?
No, for a month, there's no such thing. I don't know such calculations.
No, I'm not talking about disconnecting me completely. I mean, thoughts can go to some other place because you're in a certain process. But then you see that you're like stronger in the 10, even if you're bringing contentment from growing.
I don't understand these calculations. Nevertheless, it's incorrect what you're saying. If I need to remove myself from the 10 in my thoughts, it's incorrect.
So everything that distances me, even for a moment from the 10, I need to run away from it?
Yes. Cancel it.
Thank you.
It doesn't come from sanctity.
Okay, so I received strength, I performed an act of bestowal, and then something probably happens and I disconnect. Maybe tomorrow morning I wake up and I don't feel that excitement that I got before from this nourishment, which I understand is a force from above that allows me to perform acts of bestowal. So what does it mean not to appreciate, not to value? I want to know what to be careful from.
Yes, those means that would connect me to holiness, now I don't see them as important.
If I have desires to receive where I want to enjoy what this world has to offer, but it doesn't disconnect me from connection. Is this okay? We're not talking about these desires, right?
I didn't
understand the state.
The question is, what desires of impurity is this talking about? Only with respect to the 10 or also...
Only towards the 10? If I disconnect from them.
Thank you.
We're
reading in the study of the Ten Sefirot, Part 6, Inner Observation, Item 14. You can find the study material on the sites, Sivatova and Yervut, and so you can send questions live through the sites. Anyone asking a question in the study hall should stand up, hold the microphone close to his mouth, and speak loudly and clearly. Item 14. We must thoroughly understand what the Ari has written above, that the restriction and Balsa are two separate matters. This is because the restriction of Nehi of Ak was to diminish the light for the purpose of Nekudim. And the correction of the Balsa is not for the world of Nekudim itself, which is the world of Atzilut, but for the world of Bria below it.
Perush.
This means that here the beginning of the root of the three worlds, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya, called the separated worlds, was made. It was done by the restriction of Nehi of Ak, where the records rose from the two hays, the first hay and the bottom hay. They connected in Nehi of Ak and came in the Nikve Einaim. And from this coupling emerged the essential ten sefirot of Nekudim, as the bottom hay in the Einaim and the Nehi, Yud Kei Vav in the Echap. It is known that the records of Zon that came from Nehi of Ak returned to their place below the Tabu, like the Gar of Nekudim, meaning also through the division of the degree, where Bina and Zon went out from the degree. It turns out that this same light of Zon that return to its place after the coupling of Nikveh Einayim in the Rosh of Sag did not fill the entire ten Sfirot from the Tabu of the inner Ak downward, but only the Keter and Chokhmah in it, Bina, Zeranpin, and Malchut in it, went out from Atzilut completely and became the three worlds Bria, Yetzira, Asiya, and all this was done through the restriction of Nehi of Ak. However, the Parsa is a special correction for the purpose of Bria, meaning for the purpose of the three separated worlds, Bia, that were separated from the light of Atzilut because of the division of the degree. However, they are all named after Bina, meaning the world of Bria, since this is the highest Sfira. The matter of this correction is truly a profound issue, since in fact the Parsa is also a division of the degree on the Nikveh Einayim that is extended from the restriction of Nehi. However, there is a matter of draws from above and gives below in it. As the Ari brought from the Zohar, it means that there is a matter of ascending and descending in it, where on the one hand, it is the firmament that separates between the male upper waters and the female lower waters through the division of each degree, bringing Bina and Zon outside and making Keter and Chokhmah of the degree into male upper waters and Bina and Zon of the degree were separated and went out as female lower waters, after which the Parsa is called the separating firmament. On the other hand, there is a matter of drawing from above and giving below in her, meaning that by the upper coupling of Ab-Sag, the bottom Hay descends from the Einayim to the place of the Pe of the Rosh. At that time, the Parsa is breached, meaning that the difference between Keter and Chokhmah to Bina and Zon is cancelled because they return to their degree as before.
כן.
Yep.
מה מומו?
What מומו?
מתי קורה זיווג אבסג?
When does the coupling of אבסג that breaches the פרסה happen?
When the records of 4-3 are revealed in the Rosh of Sag.
It's a Nikudim, right?
Correct.
And then Latzilut Bria Yetzira
Asiyah.
What happens there?
As I understood, the Parsa is for the purpose of Bria, not for the purpose of Nikudim.
That's what we say, but the Parsa stands above the world of Bria.
Atzilut
is the world of Atzilut. Bria is already the world of Bria.
And the Parsa is not breached anymore?
Parsa only in Gemar Tikkun. We'll learn what happens to it exactly, but what's happening right now till Gemar Tikkun, the end of correction, is that it shatters
with the shattering of the vessels. They're vessels that enter coupling in Gadlut of the Rosh of Nikudim. And then that light breaks the Parsa.
Is this called given from taken from above and given below?
No.
So what does it mean?
It means that if the Parsa is established correctly, so through the couplings on the records, you can raise and lower the Parsa, raise it and lower it. And then it works like a pump, that it raises vessels that now enter the correction above, and then it goes back down when it connects to vessels that haven't been corrected yet, and then rises up with them again. And that's how the Parsa keeps working until the end of correction, until below it, what remains below the Parsa, below all the corrections, such phases that we can't correct. The stony heart.
When we say that Parsa elevates the vessels, she doesn't really elevate them, right? They're just filled with light, and then we call them, we regard them as ascending.
Oh, supposedly or not, that's not important. We don't talk like that.
What does it mean that the Parsa ascends, and what does it mean that it descends?
The
Parsa is the place where the world of Atzilut ends. It's a stop between the world of Atzilut and the worlds of Bia. That border between them, called the Parsa, ascends and descends.
He says that the bottom A, Malchut, does the actions. She lacks Gahal, she lacks the upper Sfirot, and she has to complete herself.
So,
what is the Parsa? Basically, what is the role of the Parsa? How does it serve Malchut?
The role of the Parsa is the border that can change its state, its location.
Because it gives...
By that, its vessels can... If they're above, they can go below the Parsa, and the opposite. The vessels that are below, that receive corrections, can ascend above the Parsa.
Another question. When the lower one rises to the upper one, what does it elevate, itself or the broken records?
That depends which state we're talking about.
The excerpt we just read, what is the purpose of this whole ascent and descent?
The ascents and descents, it's like in a pump, that it raises upward vessels that can be there and lowers below vessels that can't be above.
But these records... Nekudot of Sag that descended and met Malchut, they discover that they are powerless to rise.
Right.
So, is the purpose for the lower one to ascend, or it needs to scrutinize something?
The purpose is that the lower one will scrutinize that. They fell into the lower one. They'll scrutinize exactly who they are, what they're lacking in order to ascend.
Can't find it.
I'll read it. However, the difference that was made in the Nikveh Naim of the first Rosh called Yishsut is never cancelled with respect to the Bina and Zon that went out from it, since there it is regarded as the beginning of Atzilut, which is not subject to change. Besides the above said, there is another special correction in the Parsa. It hides and conceals the force of the bottom hay in the Nikveh Naim of the first Rosh, so it does not impart below. When the Achap returned to the Rosh, had it not imparted down to the second Rosh, the bottom hay of the second Rosh would have been unable to descend from the Nikveh Naim to the Peh, since the force of the upper one always dominates its lower one. However, the Parsa conceals it, and her power is not imparted below at that time. And remember that. It sounds like a cunningness that there was a concealment, so the lower one won't know that he can't bring the pasa downward.
And then it breaks.
Yeah, it breaks. So why is that a correction? He says there's such a correction.
The breaking is a correction. All the operations from the beginning of creation to the end of creation is only corrections with respect to the lower ones.
How does it work on us? What's concealed from us that we can constantly make mistakes and not hold on?
From us? The actions, the most fundamental operations are concealed, that it's forbidden to receive in order to receive, that there is no there's no benefit from the connection between us, elementary things.
And that stems from this first concealment?
Yes. Everything stems from the first concealment.
Because until this stage, it's like the upper one was completely working on the lower one, and
yes,
suddenly here there's a concealment. There's a force about the upper one that the lower one doesn't know about.
Yeah. To make a place for the created beings, this cessation, this stop.
We're writing in the writings of Baal HaSulam, the writings of the last generation. We're continuing from part one. You can find the study materials on Sviva Tova and the Arvut system, and you can ask questions through there too. Whoever asks a question down here in the hall, so stand up, hold the microphone close to your mouth, and speak loud and clear. Please, love.
Let's go.
Part 1. The basis of my entire commentary is the will to receive imprinted in every creature, and which is disparity of form to the Creator. Thus, the soul has separated from him as an organ is separated from the body. Since the disparity of form in spirituality is like a separating axe in corporeality, it is therefore clear that what the Creator wants from us is equivalence of form, at which time we adhere to Him once more as before we were created. This is the meaning of the words, adhere to his attributes as he is merciful, etc. It means that we are to change our attribute, which is the will to receive, and adopt the attribute of the Creator, which is only to bestow, so that all our actions will be only to bestow upon our fellow persons and benefit them as best as we can. By this, we come to the goal of adhering to Him, which is equivalence of what one is compelled to do for oneself, namely the necessary minimum for oneself and one's family's sustenance, is not considered disparity of form, as necessity is neither condemned nor praised. This is the great revelation that will be revealed in full only in the days of the Messiah. When this teaching is accepted, we will be rewarded with complete redemption. I have already said that there are two ways to discover the completeness, the path of Torah or the path of suffering. Hence, the Creator has given the humanity technology until they have invented the atom and the hydrogen bombs. If the total ruin that they are destined to bring upon the world is still not evident to the world, they can wait for the Third World War or a fourth one. God forbid. The bombs will do their thing, and the relics who remain after the ruin will have no other choice but to take upon themselves this work, where both individuals and nation will not work for themselves more than is necessary for their sustenance, while everything else they do will be for the good of others. If all the nations of the world will agree to it, there will no longer be wars in the world, for no person will be concerned with his own good whatsoever, but only with the good of others. This law of equivalence of form is the law of the Messiah.
What are you trying to understand? I don't understand.
I'm asking, is there a choice or only suffering?
There is choice, but no one wants to use the choice.
How is there a choice if they only know one thing? They don't know what bestowal is. They don't know the other side.
Why not? They do know it. If they weren't bestowal, just go and explain to them. No one hides from them. If you explain to them, then you'll see if they want to. They'll see if they want to accept bestowal or not.
I don't know what it means to explain to them. We disseminate. This dissemination reaches very few people from the 8 billion. That's a reality. So what does it mean to explain to them?
Explain that, nevertheless, on the path, that you reasonably explain to them that if everyone treats everyone else well, as much as possible, maybe in small groups or something, by this it can bring correction to the world.
You're describing it as if there's 8 billion people in an auditorium and we're sitting on stage and speaking, and they can hear or not hear, but it's not the reality.
It does not matter. This is what Kabbalists are telling you, that the world is built this way, arranged this way. What do you want?
So, and when we disseminate, we have to just spill it out and hope it reaches everybody.
Yes.
Along with that, should we measure in the vessels of this world that, let's say, it only reaches 100,000 people from 8 billion, or not to measure?
I look at how religions used to develop in the world. In those days, when there was no media or nothing, how did they nevertheless succeed?
But religions, didn't they expand because they were speaking to the will to receive? Isn't that the reason they succeeded?
They succeeded because they were selling the next world. you too are also doing it to an extent.
But we can't sell the next world. We're
what do you mean
allowed
can't? Not allowed. Where is it written that it's not allowed and you're not selling?
So friends are asking, is there a way we can sell it that it turns to the will to receive or not? The answer isn't clear.
All in all, in general, the bottom line is a person benefits from going with the second nature, yes? So this is what we have to explain to him. Because what accompanies us so far has been the will to receive, which is pushing us forward. It's pushing us forward. We still don't know what it is in order to bestow. There are such degrees where it's impossible to agree with them.
All of the correction of creation, what he writes is on this border between necessities and excess, that once it's revealed, and we know that too. He says once it's revealed, so we know, but we don't know how to find that inner border between necessities and excess.
Each one has to check within himself, and then it'll be easier for us to convey it to groups. Our groups, to the tents.
It's very vague, this border.
Make it not vague. It's in your hands. You're running away from it. You don't want to recognize it. You don't want to stand and sort out.
How can we not lie to ourselves about it?
Lie?
Yeah, that it's really necessary, but I think it's necessary, but actually it's excess.
It needs to be done through a connection with the friends. If you are with them, then it'll be clearer to you.
Thank you, Rav. Continuing how everybody will know and understand, we see that in Israel something happened now that seems just unrational. What you've been speaking about for years with reporters and that the connection between us saves us, we didn't know how to explain it to people. Now everybody's just saying it from the bottom of their heart. They're saying our enemies annul before the connection between us and our separation gives them life. So externally, we see just how atrocities and war brought this revelation. What happened internally in the nation of Israel that suddenly it's just there?
Yes, I see it, I feel it, I hear it. Let's hope that it will advance up to the complete correction without any victims. That's the way it is, but it's beautiful to discover it, to see in our eyes how much the people of Israel all of a sudden is rewarded with such cohesion, such unity and mutual appreciation. And we don't need to explain anything to anyone. But any soldier in the battlefield feels that this is his place, that he wants to remain there. He feels there better than at the center of the country among civilians. And I'm very happy that, although it wasn't an easy way, but we have been rewarded with the revelation of the corrections, and these are great corrections, which are happening to the entire nation. And we are rewarded with connection. And we can see on the soldiers who come for a few days home to be with us. How much they say that the real life is there and not here. And it hurts to hear it, but it is pain together with great joy in the heart. We have never seen such things, and we never thought that in our generation, soldiers from the center of the country will want to go out quickly and return to those dangerous places where they are fighting. It is truly a great lesson that we are going through now. And let's hope it will give, it will place a sign in our hearts that will not be forgotten. I hang great hopes on it.
What happened specifically now that suddenly this degree was revealed in the nation of Israel, the degree of connection?
This I don't know. It was probably time. A certain cup has been filled, and a certain quota has been filled, and we feel that we are going through an introspection, soul searching, and we are in a new state. Yes.
What should we do for this correction to be whole, like you said to begin with? Do we have to give it a push, or is it happening on its own?
No. We just have to be heart and soul with them, with all our soldiers on all the fronts, in wherever they are, and only pray for them, and we want to be together with them. Is duty.
Where's the state taking the nation to? What's the next adjacent state?
Into deeper and more direct introspection.
I don't see introspection. I see soldiers uniting and fighting, and a nation that's starting to come back to fight inside itself.
Okay. But it's still scrutiny. I'm very happy to see these things, even the one that is one against the other. And let's hope it will finally lead us to the right decision.
Why are you happy that the nation is going back to argue with one another? What's happy about it?
By this, they are scrutinizing each and every one's place.
How to give the spirit that's between the soldiers, they feel the unity of fighters, how to bring it into the nation? It's like here there's unity and here there's separation.
This is what happens as a result of the action itself. Those who are fighting against the real enemy that wants to kill us, that wants to throw us out from our piece of land. And our inner enemy. Each of us will nevertheless have to feel more and more that he is facing his ego. And that he must grab it and strangle it.
How to locate that inner enemy in us.
Anything that brings you closer to the other is the friend. And anyone who somehow awakens in you repulsion from the other is your enemy.
Does recognition of evil bring us to connection?
Yes.
One against the other once you recognize the ego?
Yeah.
Last question. Do you feel that this war in Israel, what happened here in the last few months, did it soften the heart of the people?
For the time being, yes. For the time being. But what happens afterwards? The people of Israel has been through such things that and went back. Retreated. Went back to its bad ways. So let's hope this time we don't go back.